All right, welcome to Linux Lugcast. We are an open podcast / lug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every first and Friday of the month using Mumble. If you would like to join us, please visit linuxlugcast.com for the server details. We also have a Mumble how-to on the site explaining how to configure your Mumble. Then join us in the Linux Lugcast room during the live show if you're unable to join us in / Linux Lugcast. You can listen to us streaming live. You can also join us in IRC on Freenode / Linux Lugcast. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you would like us to discuss, please email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com. We also have a Linux CommuniCast site and a mail list. Please visit our website for the direct links. Good evening. I am 5150. I'll be the host tonight for episode 101. And joining me are Honky Magoo.
Evening, sir.
And Joe.
Hello, hello.
And Netminer.
Hello, friends.
And I haven't looked, I honestly haven't looked to see if we've had any listener lead back this month.
No, there wasn't any listener feedback this month.
Okay. Well, other than just general talking, looks like I have some topics and you have some topics. So where do we start?
Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. My first one, this comes off a discussion on the late night Linux podcast. And I think they really discussed it to death. So, you know, I don't want to get into it too big, but I thought it was interesting. You see the member of Late Night Linux was corresponding with RMS, and apparently he told, you know, they wanted to get him on the show, but he was adamant that he would only be on Late Night Linux if they changed the name of the show to Late Night GNU Linux. And, I mean, I am a huge fan of Richard Stallman. I don't agree with him. You know, there's a lot of things practically that I do that he would not approve of. But, you know, I have to get stuff done. I like the game or whatever. You know, I've always said if we did not have Richard Stallman, we would have to invent him. But, you know, the Late Night Linux guys were perhaps not that open-minded, you know. I mean, they generally agreed, but they were saying, yeah, you know, going so far as to say you need to change the name of your podcast is, it is going too far. It's going too far into your belief system, I guess. I don't know. I do not want to get in this whole debate really about Stallman, because they really did that on Late Night in Linux. You know, I don't think there's anything we can add to that, but I just thought that was interesting. All our podcasts that, you know, have the Linux in the title, if we want to get RMS on our show, we're going to have to change it.
I think about the only answer to that is just don't have RMS on the show.
Well, I mean, I Pokey got him on Hacker Public Radio about 5 years ago. I mean, we're not that big of a show. I you know, it wouldn't occur to me to approach RMS and say, come on the show.
Well, not only that, but his stated requirements basically says, if you want me on your show, I can dictate whatever.
Well, exactly that, Miner. It was kind of a joke. I mean, I could see Late Night Linux. Those guys are pretty big, and they have been making. If you're not a regular listener, they've made a couple big changes here in the last month on who's doing the hosting. But yeah, I mean. As part of Hacker Public Radio, I might say, yeah, we're big enough for RMS. Not to belittle the show, but I mean, you know, Linux Slugcast. There's people I would invite on, but I mean, I wouldn't even know how to approach RMS. But I mean, like Tilt, you know, then there'd have to be the Linux GNU Link show. Yeah, there'd be a bunch of shows out of there that would have to change their titles to satisfy RMS.
Well, not only that, he's shooting his own relevancy in the foot, because if he wants his message out there, If he had said that I'd like to have that show a GNU Linux special, that would be different. But changing the title after he leaves just to make him happy, that does not compute.
Tell you what, Netminer, you essentially can sapulated. No, that's not the right word, but you essentially put together the whole entire argument of you know, that Late Night Linux episode. It's like, you know, they're saying, you know, if RMS was doing what he ought to be doing, he should not be worrying about credit or, you know, whether it's Linux or GNU Linux. He should be getting out there and saying, here is the message of open source or free software, because, you know, RMS does not like he doesn't like the word open source. He likes free software, free culture. You know, he should be getting out and doing that, and not worrying about nomenclature. But I mean, in that matter, you essentially encapsulated, you know, the whole thrust of that entire podcast of Late Night Linux.
Well, I've ran across that when I was dealing with the SFS. I ran DOS for far too many years, and they were very nasty about running free software under a non-free operating system instead of using it as a leveraging platform.
Okay, like I said, I did not want to turn this into an RMS bash session. I really, really like RMS. I wish I could be, you know, entirely like him, but, you know, in a practical world, it's just not possible.
Well, also, he could make a wide swath by having various shows put on GNU Linux specials with him on them, and he could bounce from show to show. But right now he's making himself PNG, and I don't mean the graphics format, because people are going to say, why should I even give him a call?
Okay, the next topic I wanted to hit, this is also from Late Night Linux, that I picked this up, is Etcher. You can hit them at etcher.io. And what this is. You know, a lot of us who are doing with mini PCs, or even if you're putting a Linux on a tower or whatever, instead of burning a CD, of course, we send it to a memory stick, and this is what this software is for. And I'm sure there's people out there who say, yeah, real men use DD. But this is what this is, in place of, and essentially it shows you, it's graphical and you have three selections, what's the ISO or what's the image you want to burn? What's it want to, graphical? What's it want to burn to? And, just let you go. What's the destination? So, it's a graphical replacement for, DD, maybe not the first one, but maybe the best one. Because a lot of times on Windows, you had these graphical things, burn this image to this disk or to this memory stick. But this does it for you. You don't have to screw with DD or anything. Now, I have tried this, and I did download an image that says, that's not an ISO, that's a USB image. It was for TrueOS. And I did click around on TrueOS, and yeah, there were different images for ISO and USB. I downloaded them both now. I don't know. I'm not sure why one would be different than another. But I've got them both. My problem. I've mentioned a customer threw away old tower, and it was a Core 2 Duo, and I'm trying to set it up as a backup sort of gaming tower. So that's why I'm going to try TrueOS on it. TrueOS, if people don't remember, it is a BSD distribution, and what they're trying to do is run Steam Windows games on it. So, you go into Steam, and it's not the open source Linux games that are going to be installed in there. It is emulating the Windows component of Valve. So I've been wanting to put that on my Windows computer. Thought, okay, well, I'll put it over there on the other one. See how that works. So didn't get that done because the timing battery, the CR2032, which will be familiar to most of you. I think I need a new one of those. And I don't even have to pull it out of one of my old junk machines. Or find somebody in town that actually sells that. Usually fairly common in automotive parts houses, because they use that for a lot of things. Is button battery in a lot of automotive applications. So, shouldn't be too hard to find. Okay, I'm just looking in the chat. Honky says we can't hear you for how long? Because I've been talking for a long time.
I can hear you.
I think that was you saying that to me.
Oh, okay, yeah, that I'm sorry, yeah, that was me initiated. I was just thinking I bored everybody to death.
Nope, still here.
Okay. Well, I guess that was my etcher. You know, like I said, I think almost all of us burn images to you know, to memory sticks, or we burn images to SD cards. So, you know, I think pretty much I'm talking to is Etcher is something we ought to talk, we ought to check out. Couple things I set up and did not complete by tonight. I did, I was thinking to do things for my Mycroft because it's always, you know, it is, Raspberry Pi 3, is always on the network. So I did install the software on my Mycroft. I have not, it's all completed, but I haven't set up on any of my computers to, go through it yet. You know, essentially what it does is it sets up a DNS and, you know, you point your computer at it instead of at your router or whatever. And,
Pi-hole?
Yeah, on Pi-hole.
Have you used it yet?
Well, that's it. You know, I'm saying I set it up. I've got it set up, but I have not reconfigured any of my workstations to point to it yet.
Okay, no, see, I had it set up, but what I did was I had my router point to it, so all the computers on the network automatically used it. The problem that I ended up having was it got to be too much of a pain to either whitelist something or shut it down temporarily for a specific website that required you to either whitelist or turn on ads for that website. It's much easier to do with the add-ons that you can put on Chrome. I mean, I might reset it up and just put it on the router that I have for my kids. That could be useful.
Yeah, and I apologize. I was between my desktop and the refrigerator getting a beer, so if that was an awkward silence, that's why.
I should go find me one of those.
Well, we'll take care of it in post. But yeah, there's things in there that I'll probably learn that maybe it's a little too much or whatever, but yeah, definitely there are browser add-ons that do a lot of the same functionality. Frankly, you know, the increased storage after replacing the SD and reinitializing the Mycroft, I was just kind of looking for things local that I could do with it, and you know, just utilize the same machine without it really taxing the user interface.
So, have you been using your Mycroft much at all for the purpose that it's meant for? I think I said that wrong, but have you been using your Mycroft for something else for the designated purpose?
Not so much. I probably use the Google Home more than I use the Mycroft.
How's the Mycroft coming along anyway?
Oh, it is coming. Probably should have been in the show notes. There was something the other day on Mycroft, in advancing ahead of, the Google Home and the Amazon, but, you know, still not as much spying on you. I mean, a lot of it is, you know, same thing, but you got, you got to trust the Mycroft people not to be so such huge spies into your life. Of course, you are paying them more for that privilege.
Now, there isn't a subscription to it, right? It's just the payment for the Mycroft itself?
Yes, but that's another thing they've talked about is, you know, hey, we're tying into this to right now, tying into Ghoul voice to text translation, but you know it was originally promoted as, you know, it's a one time thing, but you know they've been saying unless we transition to something else, there will come a time when we're going to have to charge for the service.
That's understandable if they're having to dish out money to get the services from Google.
And they are trying to transition to Mozilla, which is at least open source, but I'm not sure if it's any cheaper.
You're going to have a hard time getting people on board with something where you got to pay a monthly subscription for.
Right, and that, you know, when it was sold, that was not talked about. But like I said, I've seen stuff come up, you know, they're talking about a very nominal fee, but they have talked about at some point, you know, if we don't have some other revenue model, we may have to ask, you know, for people to chip in. But of course, you know, like, nobody who's bought a Mycroft is going to be somebody just off the street. They're, you know, it's going to be somebody who understands, you know, what goes on. And at the, you know, the old adage, if you're not paying for a service, then you are the product. You know, knowing that Google and Gmail and all that is because, you know, there's, you know, it's not free. They're selling your information. So I don't think anybody's bought a Mycroft is going to be confused about that. And so those customers are going to be more likely to say, okay, you know, if we can have a home assistant that is not immediately on the grid like Google or Amazon is, then we're willing to pay something per month or per year or whatever for that privilege. But yes, this was something that was not talked about in the promotion for this product.
Well, even if they don't get to the point where they're more widespread, it's good that they tried. It's good that somebody was out there trying to do this open source instead of, you know, just the big names.
Well, that's why I invested in the promotion too. You know, yeah, I got Google Homes for like $25 a piece at you know, Black Friday, and I'll play around with those. But definitely, I am, you know, I want to invest in you know, open source version going forward. And a lot of people are saying, well, you know, you're paying the same money for what it should have been last year. Like I said, I want somebody to be out there who is not tied into one of these big companies. Okay, I was hoping to, talking about TrueOS for a year. I want to put it on the computer I'm on right now. If you don't know, it's a BSD, and what they're trying to do is run Windows games from Steam, you know, as fast in BSD or faster than they would run on the same hardware under Windows. And I've talked about it. I was told to haul off an old it's not a new system. I mean, it's old dual core. It's not an I series, but it's an old dual core. It's enough to probably do a lot of Windows games. But told to just get rid of it. So brought it home, and I figured, I can install a dedicated video card in this slot. So I did that. Bought a hard drive, 4 gig hard drive, which is, 4 terabyte, sorry. Ridiculous amount of money for when I first started computing, gigabytes of hard drive? No, that was just ridiculous. And, first computer I had, I think it was 400 meg hard drive. And it's like, you have files bigger than that now. Easily. So, terabytes and gigabytes. Oh, man, no. Never will happen. Of course, now it has. So, I've got a 4 terabyte hard drive that I bought for this for about $100. Stuck it in, it's not a great system, but something, for free, shoot, threw a few things at it, and tried to put the TriOS, but I think what it needs really needs is a button battery CR2032 in there. It keeps complaining every time I boot it up. Can't remember the
right. It needs a CMOS battery.
Yeah, it needs a CMOS battery, and so I have. Since I haven't seen that, could be screwed up on the motherboard, but I was in Walmart today and tried to find a CR2032. Didn't find it. I might find it up by the batteries rather than by the jewelry. I forgot that walking out. But I've got
too bad Radio Shack not around anymore.
Actually, I have a functioning Radio Shack in my town.
That would be where I would go for that style of battery.
You're probably right. I might yank it out one of my junk computers and see. But yeah, that's a good idea. Is go to Radio Shack. Okay. Doesn't help me in my Chrome computer, but if you have a Pixel computer. You can now install Cretaners, so you can further isolate things from the operating system.
Which container system? Docker?
Well, they say Christini.
Okay.
You gotta have a Pixelbook to do it. Now, eventually this will come to other Chromebooks, so... Once I'll be able to tell you more once this is available for my Intel Chromebook.
Cool. Now, because I've been debating on this project that I'm thinking about doing for a while now, I already have a container that connects out to PIA for a VPN, but it only accepts a maximum of 5 connections for the service that I have. So I'm debating setting it with the setup that I have on one computer, setting up another Docker instance of a VPN server so that it can accept clients, but then its internet output is through the other Docker image that's connected to PIA. So then I could connect as many computers as I wanted to that one connection.
And I don't know about our listeners, but, you know, what Joe just said, I'm kind of stunned because I have no idea what he was talking about.
So basically you're using one container, you're adding a separate container to be able to link, just basically kind of daisy chain the containers because there's a limit of 5 on the first one.
Right. PIA, Public Internet Access, is a VPN service, and I'm paying like $40 a year for it, but you're only allowed 5 maximum simultaneous connections. So in order to get around that, if I need more computers hooked up, I'm going to have an inbound server that accepts connections in one Docker image, and then have that Docker image output all of its internet to the instance that is outbound to PIA.
So basically you're just funneling everything through the one.
Correct.
That's awesome. Now, quick question on the containerization on the Pixelbooks. Is that more like jails? You know, BSD is jails as opposed to the containerization like Docker?
50.
Yeah, you guys are talking to me like I know anything about either jails or Docker. I kind of just threw this link up on the app, on the episode.
I should check the link.
I'm going to say it's Crostini, so whoever's a big expert on Crostini could probably answer that question.
Yeah, I'm not seeing much on Crostini by itself. All I'm seeing it is in relation to Chromebooks and Pixel, not where it originated from or what you can use with that container system.
Well, it looks like the container system is called VMC. And it talks about running a setting up a Debian VM in a container. So I'm guessing it seems more like a way to do VMs than it does just containerization. Well, most Docker containers are, you know, they'll be start off with a Debian container and then put your, you know, item application here.
Right. It's like a miniature VM.
Right. Though I can't really, I can kind of see doing it on a desktop, but I always figured containerization was just a brilliant idea when it comes to, you know, the server side, because that goes back to the idea of what was the analogy that I heard used, the pet versus cattle. So instead of just sitting there trying to fix one, you can just kind of kill it and then restart it back up again.
Right. It's also a great way to test things quickly.
That's true too. But I really like the idea that, you know, if something comes, you know, something gets corrupt, you could basically just kill it and restart another VM from the last snapshot and a VM, well, another container from the last snapshot. And then the SQL Server is apart from your application. And so, like, if one is corrupt, you know, it's not going to harm the other.
Right. Easily replaceable modules.
Right. So is containerization kind of taking the place of VMs?
No, there's still always a place for VMs. But the nice thing about containers is it's going to hold the minimum amount of libraries that you're going to need for a specific application, while a VM is going to hold everything.
Right. So what would be the advantage of a VM over Tainer?
Well, I would use a VM if I wanted to test out an environment, or if I knew that a specific program that I wanted to use only worked in a specific operating system and I didn't want to install the whole operating system. Otherwise, usually if it's just one application, I'm going to go and look and see if there is a Docker container available.
I was going to say that would, in my opinion, that would make a lot of sense when it comes to like personal use at home. But if you're running a business and you want to spin up a server, it seems like containers would be the better way to go versus VMs. But I mean, I'm not in that business, so I'm not sure.
Right. If it's a specific one job server, then yeah, a dock container does seem like it would be the better solution over a VM. But if you want more fine-tuned control to be able to go in and set everything up exactly the way you want instead of the way somebody else wanted, then maybe a VM would be better for something like that.
Well, that also require you to learn more about Docker containers, because you can, I forget what the heck it's called, to make a Docker file and then pull everything in and set it all up the way that you want it to set up.
Right, and you can set it up so that you can access it from terminal at just like it was a regular, well, it is a regular operating system, but with direct control over everything that's in it. It's just that one more step that's probably a little bit harder.
Right, and that's the way the only time I ever used Docker images was having to do it that way, because I was using it on a Raspberry Pi 2, and there's not a whole lot of Docker containers pre-made that are set up for ARM processors. So the amount of
there them, is
was,
now.
Is it really?
There was a lot of growth there for a while in the ARM containers. You can find almost as much in the ARM containers as you can the other containers.
I'll have to check that back out. It's probably been over a year since I last played with it.
Yeah. And the other thing that I find difficult with containers, yes, you can pull out all your settings and then just re-image, but updating a container, not as simple as with a VM.
Well, I've never played with a VM, but like you were saying before, you can open a command line into it and do an update that way.
Yeah, but if you're doing an update that way and the update requires a restart or a bringing down of services, it will bring down the whole container and you'll be right back where you started.
True.
Now, I haven't looked as much into, say, snaps, but snaps really aren't a containerization, while it is still doing something similar in that it brings in its own libraries, all the libraries that it needs in order to be able to run. It's still more like setting up a desktop application.
Right. That just seems like a new snaps, app image, and I forget what the other one is. Just seems like another way to package up an application.
Flatpaks.
That was it.
Yes, not only that, all of these are another name for static linked binary.
There's got to be a decent way to go in and update a container.
Yeah, I thought there was some movement on that recently in some of the Docker-related material that I was reading, but I haven't gone deep enough to figure it out yet.
What was the other one that sprung up either from some of the same guys who were doing Docker? Was that something core I have stuck in my head?
Yeah, I've been trying to remember what it was called too, so I'm not going to be able to help you on that. Wasn't it the one that Red Hat picked up?
Was it Red Hat? I thought like one of the original creators of Docker thought it was just heading in another direction or something like that, so he abandoned it and decided to start something else that was more along the lines of what he meant to do or something. CoreOS? Is that it?
Maybe. I'm trying to look right now to see if I can find the one I was thinking of. Kubernetes is the one I was thinking of.
Well, from my understanding, Kubernetes is just an application to help spin up Docker containers or containers. I'm not sure if it has to be Docker containers or not. And you're right, CoreOS is Red Hat.
Right. And CoreOS is the operating system that revolves around everything being containerized, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, Kubernetes just automates the Linux container operations.
So how do you do OS updates inside of a VM?
Inside a VM, it's the same way you would do it on a regular desktop. I mean, as long as you have the internet connection, it's sudo apt-get update.
Which is the same thing I had to do when I updated the my containers.
No, I never had that issue with the VM, but I haven't used one in quite a while. Mostly it's just been containers these days.
Now, has Docker gone to just 64-bit?
I'm not sure.
I'll say the last time I looked, something said it. If it's got ARM containers, it'd be 64-bit, right?
Right. They do have a 64-bit ARM.
That's true.
So, anybody working on any other projects?
Well, 50, you have some more stuff? 50, you with us? Maybe you want to get another beer. In the meantime, I got a couple of things here.
Go for it.
So recently, on my cell phone, I hit my data cap, and I got the wonderful messages from Verizon saying, you have like 1 gig left or half a gig left or something like that. If you go use any more, you're going to pay overages, blah 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 blah. So, normally on my lunch at work, I usually watch something on either Netflix or Amazon Prime on my phone. And so now I needed something to watch. And I've been watching some tutorials and YouTube videos and stuff. So I figured try to maybe figure out a way to download stuff from YouTube. And so there was nothing in the Play Store. So I looked around ways to put YouTube DL. And you can put YouTube DL on your phone with Termux. So you basically download Termux, install Python. Give me a second, bring up the link. Yep, basically you just need to install Python and ffmpeg, and then you use pip install, which is a Python installation program or package program. Pip install YouTube DL, and boom, you got YouTube DL. But the problem now is you need places to actually put the YouTube videos. So you need to install a program called what is it? An external storage. So basically, all I have to do is do termux dash setup dash storage, and it'll set up some links. So in termux, that'll be like slash storage slash shared, and that'll be the root of the shared storage between all apps. It just different places will be similar, symlinked. Different places in termux will be symlinked to different places on your phone. So I'm playing around with that, which works great, by the way. I've had no problems with that. I mean, it's good for if I want to watch a video on something like. So one of the things I had found was I'm like, all right, I can do YouTube DL. Now what else can I do? So I did a search around for like what was it, like top things to do with Termux, and one of them was to put a bunch of pen testing type tools. Just you can just download some regular tools like Nmap and stuff like that. So I got interested in Nmap and downloaded a bunch of videos about how to use Nmap. And I've been playing around with Nmap on the phone through Termux. Yeah, and then one of the cool things is, when I'm driving along, I can download just the audio of a file that way, of a video, so I can just listen to it on my way into work. It's really worked out pretty good. So One of the other things I've also found was a actually, you know what? I had to open it up for like over the button for a second if anyone has anything to say.
Yeah, I used to love me some YouTube DL. I used it to replace the RSS functionality that YouTube took away a couple of years back. I just set it up as a cron job to run once a week, and then all of the different playlists that different users would create on YouTube, whatever the newest video was, it would automatically grab it, and it would be available for me to watch.
That's pretty cool. I think in about a week or so, I'm going to look for a script to just download a ton of them, ton of videos.
Yeah, it's easier to... So you can do it directly with YouTube DL if they're in a playlist. You can download the entire playlist. And then if that playlist changes, they add something, you can do it again, and it'll only grab new stuff.
Nice.
And I do enjoy that feature where you can just strip out the audio and have that saved separately.
Yeah, that is awesome. There's a lot of times when, you know, I can't really watch the thing, but it's great to have it to listen to.
Another good YouTube tool is SlimJet web browser. It can save both video and audio off of YouTube in a variety of formats.
Isn't that YouTube DL front end that came out a few years back, several years back?
As far as I know, it's a full browser. It may use YouTube DL internally. I know it uses MPEG, but I think it's a Chrome browser with some other additions.
Okay, then it's probably not the one that I was thinking of, but it still sounds cool.
Now, on Linux, you have to sometimes jump through some hoops to get FMPEG installed and linked in or what have you, but because under Windows, they install it natively.
Right, I think that might be a pip install on that one, too.
What, FFmpeg?
Yeah, I know I have it set up somewhere. Well, maybe it was the FFmpeg tools to convert M4B to MP3.
Maybe.
You were still talking about that tool that you were using and what plans you had for it?
Oh, the only thing... I want to look for try to write a script to just do like a batch download of things. Cause I got a list of a bunch of videos and stuff on like Nmap, and I'm debating as to whether I want to at some point try to get my Red Hat certification. So I've been watching some videos on that, and I haven't done much searching for it yet. I've had other things occupying my time. Right now, I just kind of pick one or two videos and download them, but that's my plan for that.
Yeah, I've done that with the Red Hat playlists before. Just grab the whole playlist, and if there's not a playlist of the things that you want, then you can pretty easily make your own, but you do have to make it public in order for it to work.
So the other thing is a website called distrotest.net. I actually saw this on G+, probably about a month ago, and I meant to bring it the past two shows, but I kept forgetting to put it in there. So it is a way to test out different distros through a web browser or through VNC. I played around with it a little bit, and it's a pretty cool idea if you want to test out a different Linux operating systems.
You mean there's more than just Ubuntu and Mint?
102, sir. 102. One or two.
So what are you running?
I have CentOS, Arch Linux 32, Bodhi Linux, and Debian. But Debian's the one that's just crashed on me, which is why I'm on Mumble on my phone at the moment. So I think I got a kernel panic on it. I'm having a hard time trying to fix it.
How's Bodhi?
Nice. I'm a huge fan of Enlightenment, and it's basically Enlightenment with Ubuntu.
Cool.
What are you running?
Mint and Lubuntu.
Now, are they still developing LXDE? Are they still developing LXDE, or is it just LXQT now?
I thought the name had switched from LXDE to which one was it?
LXQT.
Yeah, I thought it had all switched over from that.
Okay. I didn't know whether they had or not. I heard that the LXDE guys had combined forces with the QT people and made LXQT.
Actually, it was Razer.
Right, Razer QT.
Yeah, the last update I did on my netbook that's running that, I couldn't run the LXDE or the desktop environment anymore. I had to install Mate, and then the desktop environment worked.
So LXDE just like shut down completely?
Well, after the update, the desktop simply wouldn't come up. It'd black screen as soon as I logged in.
Fun.
Yeah, it wouldn't let me use that, what is it, Control Alt F4 to go straight to the terminal? I can't remember the command off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up again. That, and on my Linux Mint laptop, which is MSI GE72, every time the NVIDIA graphics drivers update, I have to uninstall them and reinstall them to get them to work right, which means I also have to go through the grub and turn off the drivers on boot, and then remember to turn them back on.
Ooh, fun. Good thing I don't think Mint updates that often.
Well, that's a driver update, so...
Right.
Plus, I can be fairly certain with Mint that anything that works on Ubuntu is going to work on Mint, such as Steam games.
That's true. But isn't SteamOS based on Debian now?
I had heard that they had a deal with Debian, and I can understand the appeal, especially if they're still planning on continuing the SteamOS. Isn't Ubuntu a fork of Debian?
Yes. Or it's a Debian-based. I'm not sure what the difference is, if there is one.
Yeah, I vaguely remember some discussion a long time ago about Linux Mint not being a fork of Ubuntu, but being a derivative, and then later on becoming a fork.
Yeah, I think when Mint first came out, it was pretty much just Ubuntu with either the Mate or Cinnamon desktop, and basically just the base is Ubuntu, and then he threw on his own packages on top of it. So it's not, you know, I don't think he changed any of the underpinnings. He just added some stuff on top, not like Kubuntu would be Ubuntu with everything stripped out for KDE. So, but I think now he's gone a bit farther away from that and doing his own stuff, that it's probably now a proper fork.
Right. That's what I remember happening. Now, CentOS, that's the open source fork of Red Hat, right?
Correct.
How well does that work?
What was that?
How do you like it?
Well, they have a I have a desktop version, a KDE version that I put on a laptop. I haven't done too much with it yet. It seems like something that shouldn't be a desktop version, but I think I had a laptop and I was going to use it as a laptop type server, because that's what I was kind of using it for before. Then I found that they have an image for the Banana Pi, a CentOS image for the Banana Pi, and I might just use that as the server. I haven't figured it out yet. I have other machines that I've been using too, so I basically just installed it onto the laptop and haven't really played much around with it yet. I can tell you this though, with all the problems I've been having tonight, I figured, oh, what the hell, I'll install Mumble on it. Mumble is not available in the repos, which I guess makes sense if you're setting up a server. You don't need a Mumble client. Either that or I just looked for the wrong file.
Well, isn't there actually, I know there is a mumble container.
That's true. But I don't think Docker is installed by default on CentOS. It might be. I don't know. I don't know that much yet.
And what was the other one you were running?
Let's see. I have Bodhi, Debian, and Arch Linux 32.
What are you running that Arch 32 on?
It is a Dell Latitude 2100. It's a small little like 10-inch laptop.
So a netbook.
Kind of. I mean, it's basically just a laptop that's small. It's an older laptop, so I think it's just a dual-core processor. I think I bumped it up to... Probably it's got 2 gigs of RAM on it. But I put a SSD in it, so it runs nice and fast. I initially installed it with a program called Architect Linux, which is basically an ncurses way to set up a bunch of scripts that automatically... It's almost like having a GUI install for Arch Linux, but you go through a bunch of ncurses menus to set up everything that you want for the system. And I think it just basically creates a script and then goes and downloads all the things and, you know, partitions thing, everything the way you want it to be. But then, you know, Arch Linux dropped support for 32-bit, and I was able to find the Arch Linux 32, and I switched all of my repositories over to that. And so I could still run my Arch Linux system, but, you know, basically it's Arch Linux on 32-bit. Have you ever experienced kernel panic before?
Not that I can remember off the top of my head. I mean, I know what it is, but I can't ever remember the alert coming up.
Yeah, I updated my Debian machine and then shut it down, and when I restarted it, it won't restart.
Can you just reinstall the kernel? I mean, you should be able to.
Well, with Grub, I've been trying to go back to other kernel images.
Right.
And that doesn't help.
Nuke and pave.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I think that's one of the reasons I keep all of my actual data on secondary drives. Just the OS on the primary drive.
Right. I definitely don't have anything on here that's, you know, that I couldn't delete. Plus, if I need to get anything, I can always just grab a live ISO and go in that way and copy out what I need and, you know, then nuke and pave.
Yeah. At least you don't have encryption. That would make it a lot more difficult.
Right. Yeah, I'm not worried about anybody trying to get the data off of the machine, so I haven't figured out a reason to encrypt my file system yet.
I have started putting my home drive on a separate hard drive. Hopefully next time I have to do a full reinstall, that'll make things a little bit easier when it comes to getting all my files back on.
Now, a whole other drive, or just do a separate partition?
I have it on a completely separate drive.
There you go.
But that's because I started using one of the M.2 drives, and the size there isn't all that large for what I could afford. And I think it's a 256 gig, actually, and I have it split into two partitions because there's some games from Steam that, even with Play on Linux, aren't going to work on Linux. So it's easier just to get them up and running correctly on Windows.
Yeah, about the only game I've played in the last couple of years besides some emulated games on my DS has been a game called Hearthstone from Blizzard. And I got that running once with Play on Linux, and then I did like a nuke and pave, and I've tried reinstalling it on several different machines and have not been able to successfully reinstall that with Play on Linux.
Right, and then there's some games that supposedly play on Linux but really suck to try and play on Linux just because of the overhead involved, like Witcher 2, which I was able to get started on Linux, but sucked so bad that it was unplayable. I think we're both too polite. We both see each other press that push to talk button and stop.
I thought the thing that really stinks is just I've not been able to find the time to be able to do any actual gaming anymore. And Hearthstone is also a mobile app, but that thing has so much overhead. It hasn't worked. I actually haven't tried installing it on this new phone, but it's not like a new news, so it probably won't work all that well. But it's way too heavy for some reason, and it just lags down on the mobile.
Hearthstone Heroes of Warcraft?
Yep. It's a card game.
Did you ever play Diablo?
I did not.
Oh, well, I was going to suggest Torchlight and Torchlight 2. Torchlight 2, I've played all the way through, and it plays really well on Linux, and it's Linux native, so... And it's just has some similarity.
I heard that. See, the good thing about Hearthstone is it's a card game. So if you have like maybe 5 minutes to sit down and play, then it's good. You can like go sit down, do a match or whatever, and then that's it. You don't have to, you know. You start playing some of these other games, and you sit down, and when you have 5 minutes, and next thing you know, an hour's passed.
Yeah, no, I do get that. It's also something that I do with my wife. So she loves to watch me play video games. I enjoy watching her play video games. So lately, well, we got kind of tired of Borderlands 2. I've played the hell out of it. It's a great game. I enjoy it a lot. But I've kind of been branching out in some of the Windows-only games. The Batman Arkham series.
Nice.
And, you know, I keep seeing...
You may want to look at something called Subnautica.
What is it?
Essentially, it's a spaceship crashes on an alien world, and you have to develop your bases. You have to find the cure for an alien bacterial infection. And eventually you have to get enough stuff to build an escape ship. So, got a whole bunch of things, and there are mods for it. I don't know if it runs under Linux.
That definitely sounds like an interesting concept for a game.
Yeah, if you want YouTube videos, look at Mingles with Jingles. They also have a number of mods for it, so that once you get the... go through the game a few times, you can upgrade or side grade, change it some in minor ways or radical ways, depending. It's very marine based, so part of your development process is developing and enhancing systems so you can go deeper and deeper into the aquasphere.
Cool. Now, who found this Magic Mirror link?
What link?
Somebody put a Magic Mirror Builders link in the show notes. Guess it showed up like magic. By the looks of it, it is the open source modular smart mirror platform.
That's a Pi project, isn't it?
Yeah. Just looks like an application that all you have to do is install this on a Pi and you have the back end for a Magic Mirror. That's kind of cool. I always thought the Magic Mirror was kind of a fun idea.
I don't know what a magic mirror is. Could you enlighten this Windows refugee?
So magic mirror is basically where you have a... basically, it's a mirror, but with where it'll have like the weather or the news in the background. So, oh man, I can't think of how they physically do it. So it's basically like... Joe, can you save me here, or am I in the weeds here? Am I myself?
You know, I've seen the project a couple of times. I never actually went that deep into reading how it was done, but I assume you take the backing off of a mirror, you put a tablet up or a screen up against it, you have the Pi putting data onto the screen, and my wife is saying you have to scrape down the film on the mirror on the backside of it.
Okay, that makes sense. Basically, it's just a way that you can have a mirror set up, and like the top right hand corner or whatever, it'll show like just stuff like data, like like if you see in the image, if you follow the link and see the image all the way down at the bottom, it'll show like the, like I said, the weather, and it'll have like the RS like an RSS feed type thing for news.
I think some of the builds were actually just a screen and a camera too, but like I said, it's been a long time since I looked at it. Anybody excited for the upcoming announcement for Borderlands 3?
I would be if I had the opportunity to play more games.
Give up sleep.
That's basically what it would take. Though I'm not sleeping much now, so the 2-year-old took away my sleep.
They do that. Anybody got anything else?
Sorry, I just went down the rabbit hole of trying to find a good example of the magic mirror or how it's done.
Yeah, probably look it up on Instructables. I know that they used to have a whole section dedicated to the Raspberry Pi, and I think that's where I saw the project.
I'm in Hackaday right now. All right. I guess we can call it a night. No matter, you have anything else?
No, I've just been filling in the jinx here when I can.
Alrighty, so our next recording date will be May 4th, 2018. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We want to thank Tony Bemis from the Sunday Morning Linux Review for our web hosting, WordPress support, and our email list server. And we want to thank Delwyn for providing the Mumble server we use and the bot module. To find the next show recording date, all you have to do is in our IRC channel, type the command, .ns, and it'll give you the next recording date. I have been Honky Magoo. With me tonight has been Joe
Good night.
and Netminer.
Good night. And good night, 5150, wherever you are.
Good night, 50.
I thought that was a pretty good show.
Yep. Then again, I'm biased. I think they're all good. Alrighty, sir. I think I'm going to call it a night.
Sounds like a plan. Talk to you later.
Thanks for coming on.
Well, just in case, I'm recording right now.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the stream is doing, but it's not re on my client, it's not showing recording. So that's a good
Yeah,
idea.
probably without Honky, we aren't recording.
Well, Joe has been up and chatting, so we may have our troika after all.
Yeah, I think Fweeb had some stuff in the show notes, so are you back, Honky?
That's a no. Still can't hear you. Nothing.
I feel for Honky because I know how frustrating this is, that Mumble is usually just this very simple program, and then when it goes belly up, it seems very, very hard to diagnose.
Well, I certainly have had my share of reinstall Mumble or whatever fumbles.
Well, I mean, maybe it's not just an open source thing, but it seems to me that we're kind of lucky we have so many channels to communicate. I mean, if you had a similar problem with Windows, I'm thinking you're just going to be out of luck. Your friends are not going to be able to tell you, no, we can't hear you. You just be really frustrated until you figure it out.
Yeah, when I used to use Skype, I had some times like that. Of course, that was when Skype had a decent, had a better user interface.
Yeah, I haven't checked recently. I know that the Skype for Linux official was out there, but the interface was just terrible and it was completely useless.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily talking about Skype, but I mean, you know, we have avenues. You know, so if it doesn't work, we can find a forum or whatever, go on and say, hey, this is what's going on. Why is this not working for me? And it just seems to be that, you know, the proprietary software, they just assume it works. And when it doesn't, there's not much of an avenue to fix it.
True.
Exception to that might be gaming. I mean, because, well, you guys are old enough. You know, gaming in the old days, you had to try this, try that, try this memory manager, that memory manager, this config, that config, to get the game to work. I keep thinking the you know, the folks in the old days who were gamers and were, you know, constantly pinging on things to find a way to make it work, those are the natural people to fold into the open source community. People are just not like, you know, okay, yep, it did, you know, software didn't work, go buy different software. And right. You know, you folks here fear like, no, we're gonna bang on this thing until we make it work.
Exactly. Most people, if it doesn't work on that first try, that's it. They're done. I get something that doesn't work and I just see it as a challenge.
Well, I keep a couple of old P1s around to run FreeDOS just for those old school challenges.
I can't say I go that far, but I know some of the Raspberry Pi MAMEs that I've used, I've set up some DOS games on.
Well, I haven't set them up as a gaming machine. I'm probably, next time I hack on at least one of them, I'm going to do a CF conversion.
Well, this is something I talked about on our last show, and I was gratified it wasn't just me, you know, like, get something like a Chromecast. And, yeah, sometimes you have to keep banging on the thing to make it work. And I was thinking, you know, what Dore would call the straights, some other people would call the normals. You know, they buy one of those things, you know, Chromecast, buy it once, and, you know, have a glitch. And say, okay, this isn't for me, and drop it, you know. And so it's for the rest of us who keep banging on the things to make them work.
Yeah, I've thought about, not Chromecast streaming, but I've thought about seeing what I can do with Steam streaming.
Yeah, that's mostly built in and very automated when it comes to Steam. If you have two computers, it's on the same accounts. You can usually just write from one Steam console, access the other one.
Well, I haven't really looked into how that actually works as an application level item.
And I am thinking, you know, whoever goes on, like, you know, we have the Amazon sticks or whatever, you know, whoever gets into that and, just makes it work. Because, I mean, you know, Chromecast, it's actually got worse for me, you know, if I go on YouTube and say, yeah, I want this video, this video, this video, this video, you know, after about three, you know, it drops out and tries to start playing on the local device rather than the Chromecast. And then, of course, you stop it and you wait till all the videos that you played. But, you know, that's fine for me. I mean, I am used to playing with tech and screwing around and things not working and having to wait on the tech. But, you know, for the straights, you know, door to door would say, you know, those guys are going to get frustrated. Why is this not working for me? So, you know, if the Amazon tools or whatever would come up and start saying, oh yeah, this works and this is flawless and whatever, you know, whoever does that is, even if they don't have the functionality, you know, maybe it's just Amazon stuff and not Google stuff. But somebody comes up with something that just works out of the box every time. And there's no fiddly stuff. Whoever does that is going to make some coin.
You get 3 videos to play in a row?
If I'm lucky.
Yeah, most of the time I feel lucky if it makes it all the way through the first video.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it used to be better than it is now, but I mean, you click on a video and then it starts playing on the local device. No, I don't want that. And you pause it and you say, wait till what I'm looking at on the Chromecast is done and then I'll let you go.
No, I don't think I've ever really had any luck with a Chromecast, and it always feels so limited. I can get a computer to send videos to a Chromecast, but if I have a computer and it's all set up for that, then why wouldn't I watch it on the computer? Now, a phone, it's nice. You can set it up, but you can't use Netflix. You can basically use YouTube and maybe some of the videos you find floating around the rest of the internet, but I don't see the benefit.
Well, I don't know about you, but my TVs are bigger than my computer monitors.
Right. But even then, you're still at least somewhat limited on what you can cast to it.
Well, that's pretty much my whole consumption of consumer stuff is through a TV monitor. I mean, all the TV shows I watch are somehow Chromecast, pretty much.
And I think all of my computers are hooked up to TVs, using them as monitors.
Okay, well, I don't have that. I pretty much I'm throwing it across the network.
And I see that you can cast Netflix to Chromecast.
Oh yeah, pretty much anything. You can throw the Chromecast. And I will correct from the last show. I said I had been watching Krypton on Sci-Fi Network, and I got to episode 4. And it asked me to log in with my,
cable account.
Yeah, cable provider affiliate or whatever, and wasn't able to provide that. So, it's one of those typical things. You know, they provide a taste, and then they take it away from you.
Yeah. Well, I think I made it most of the way through the first episode of Krypton, but I didn't make it all the way through the first episode. I'll have to catch up on it one of these days. It seemed to be okay.
Oh, I liked it. It'll probably be one of those things like, it'll eventually turn up someplace else because I got all the way through season 2 of The Expanse. I think that was on Amazon. If I don't get it legit, I imagine eventually they will put it out there because they will want to make money. You know, it's like Legion. Season 2 of Legion is out there. And eventually season 1 turned up on Hulu. So I'm thinking, well, don't sweat season 2. It'll eventually show up too. And like I said, same thing with The Expanse. I'm caught up to season 2 without I'd been provided links, but hey, you know, I was able to get to it. Doctor Who. You know, I don't think there's new episodes until like end of the year.
Fall.
Yeah, exactly. And when they come out, yeah, I think I can buy those on Amazon, I think. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff I would like to see because, you know, I'm not in town. I don't have a cable provider and can't connect to, you know, like, one of the shows that I would like to grab would be The Alienist. Seems interesting. And I'm thinking eventually almost everything is going to show up in a place I can grab it.
Cool. Now, I'm a little worried about all the different media companies all trying to start up their own separate streaming services. And what that's going to do, it's going to make it very difficult for a cord cutter to pay for everything they might want to watch. Once again, much very similar to cable in the first place.
Well, they're also going back to the old days when to have a telephone, you had to have one for each of the telephone companies.
Oh, wow, man. Netminder, that does remind me. I mean, there was a time in my grandfather's house, there were like three phones, and they were each on a different network.
Yeah, that's what they're headed for, where you might have one cable coming through, but you're going to have applications or accounts on everybody's different service, and not only that, there's going to be tremendous overlap.
And with Disney pulling all of their stuff from everybody else so that they can start their own streaming service, I if it's successful, I just see it being the beginning of the end of being able to watch what I want to on the internet legally.
Now, have they given a time yet for when they're going to do that?
I haven't seen anything on it. I've just, you know, heard the rumors. I'm sure they still have to work through the contracts that they already have in place with Netflix.
Gentlemen, you may want to look into something called Maven. It's not necessarily for your big production people, but somebody is actually trying to come out with a truly independent, small operator, small producer, aggregator.
The only information that I can see on when they're supposed to be going live is late next year.
Yeah, well, duplicating all of the stuff for, you know, Netflix or what have you, duplicating the infrastructure must be a pain even for Disney.
I mean, to weigh in, and if I sound different, this is because my wireless headset apparently ran out of juice, so I'm now plugged into the juice. But you know, both Disney and Marvel have gone, oh yeah, we're going to have our own networks. And you know, with the Disney content, I might say, yeah, I'll do $5 a month. With the Marvel content, if they take everything out of Netflix, which I think would kill Netflix, but all the Marvel movies, all the Marvel shows, you know, I would probably go, yeah, I'll do $5 a month for that. And you know, we've got looming the new DC network, which is mainly going to be, you know, animated stuff. And yeah, I mean, I rented the new the one where the criminals all work for the government.
Suicide Squad.
Yes, Suicide Squad. There's a new Suicide Squad animated that I rented tonight. I haven't watched yet.
I didn't enjoy it.
Okay, well, I guess maybe I won't like it then, but I got that and rented it tonight. So, generally, the animated DC stuff, as movies, I pretty much like. I did like Batman by Gaslight. Maybe not as much as I thought I was hoping to, but I did enjoy it. But if they break all these up, probably I might pay for it. Now the one thing very controversial is Star Trek Discovery on CBS. But if you wait till the end of the series, really, you can grab that for a week or two and watch all the episodes and then cancel again and have your $5 charge. So that's definitely possible. And looking at it, you could see them getting really, really desperate. We'll give you a month for nothing, and please come join our channel. So I really don't think the paid CBS is successful for them.
Yeah, I'm not gonna get CBS All Access because I like one show.
No, I agree with you there, and should cancel before I did. I could have fit the whole thing into 1 week if I wanted to. And like a lot of people, I'll tell you, Discovery didn't get good until about halfway through it. Go watch The Orville instead.
Did that get renewed?
Oh, yeah. And there is talk. I don't think it's likely, but there is talk. If anybody saw the first episode of Black Mirror from the last series, that getting a series by itself. And if anybody doesn't know, Black Mirror on Netflix is an anthology series, very much like Twilight Zone, and the first episode of the last year was pretty much, this awkward sort of guy who had this big software company, almost kind of like a player one. Not as expansive, but had a online, sort of Star Trek video game, and this awkward guy would bring in his employees as characters. So he would copy them in, copy their DNA, and if of course, the real people would keep going on as normal, but the copied people would be, in his universe and at his mercy, and these people were not happy about that, and eventually, by the end of the episode, managed to rebel and get some control back over their lives, but the fantasy thing that the you know, the bad guy at the center set up. It, you know, and these people, that, you know, they can't come back to their normal lives. They, you know, they got to go on in this fantasy, but without this guy maniacal being controlling them. You know, very much Star Trek like, and apparently there has been a lot of I don't think it'll come to anything, but there has been a lot of people online saying, you know, yeah, let's do this as a series with these people in this Star Trek setting, which in a way I would say, you know, isn't that the very thing the guy was trying to do? The evil guy was trying to do in the episode of Black Mirror. But yeah, it is at least a possibility. We will get a series of these people negotiating the video game in a very Star Trek sort of way.
Should we think about starting the show?
Well, will Honky be joining us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Dang, man. All right.
Can you do me a favor and do a backup recording? I was having problems with my audio, but the one of the computers can still connect to the server. I got it deafened and muted, and I got it doing a recording, but I'm not sure how well that's going to come out. So if you could do a backup, that'd be fantastic.
Well, you can see I've been recording, you know, for a while. So I'll definitely throw that up on your server tomorrow, or at least the, you know, the Google page.
Awesome. I didn't notice. Thank you.
Yeah, I've probably got, what, an hour at least? More than that, maybe, of what we've been doing?
Oh, I can't believe it's 10 already.
Okay, well, we've been going for a while, and it's been a while since, you know, I'll volunteer to be the host.
Okay.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio-only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio!
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Rich, he's a bloody drunk.
If you don't like a guest, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get bad.